Declaration of Human Rights on December 10th, 1948. Article 1 of that declaration states, in quote, all human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. They are endowed with reason and conscience and should act towards one another in a spirit of brotherhood, end quote. Human dignity is inextricably linked with human rights and a belief in the brotherhood of all humankind. The notion of human dignity has been the subject of many centuries of philosophical inquiry. Most of the explanations emphasize the rational capacities and the free will that characterize human beings and make of them something absolutely unique among living beings. Ancient Greek philosophers, in particular Plato, came to the conclusion that the core of every human individual is not just pure matter, but a spiritual principle which was called soul. He argued that since human beings are capable of spiritual activities, understanding, self-understanding, loving, self-determining by judging and choosing, expressing themselves through arts and science, etc., humans are essentially spiritual beings. Precisely thanks to their spiritual component, human beings were regarded as radically unique among living beings and were thought to have a share of the divine. Theosophy teaches an absolute, infinite, omnipresent divine principle which is the source and substratum of all. It can be better spoken of as the infinite and eternal energy and consciousness which is all and in all. Sow a thought, reap an act. Sow an act, reap a habit. Sow a habit, reap a character. Sow a character, reap a destiny. There is inescapable truth that lies at the heart of this simple formula of sowing and reaping, otherwise called karma. And that is that the quality of a life, yours or mine, for example, is not determined by the happenstance of genetics or by the influence of environment. It is not measured in material possessions or in the trappings of youth. It is not dependent on personality or social acclaim. On the contrary, the intrinsic value of the lives we lead reflects the strength of a single trait, our personal moral fiber. Perhaps this has something to do with karma's association with ethics and morality. Who is responsible for determining which life value should predominate, discerning between skillful and unskillful acts, or what constitutes a good life? Karmic doctrine asserts that each individual must decide this for themselves. We should consider karma as the struggle for wholeness and wellness, and not a system of punitive judgment. Ethics and karma is ultimately about cultivating awareness and compassion for ourselves, for others, and for the world. Karma enables individuals to examine subjective experience and provides continual opportunities to enact the necessary changes in the present moment. Karma is fundamentally concerned with contact, engagement, and relationships in life. Thus, an understanding of karma helps facilitate the ability to make more informed choices, to alter or deepen one's life path, and ultimately to live a more fulfilled and spiritual reality. The law of karma can be described as the law of self-created destiny, for it is the law of cause and effect, action and reaction, sequence and consequence. If I put my hand in the fire, my hand will get burnt. But it will not be fate, and nor will it be God that caused my hand to become burnt. The burning of the hand is simply the inevitable and natural effect of the cause that I will have set in motion. No one can deny the omnipresent existence of the law of cause and effect on the physical, objective plane of life. It is plainly and often painfully there for all to see. This teaching about karma simply carries the same law of cause and effect onto all levels of being, subjective as well as objective. Since it often takes time for the right opportunities and circumstances to arise in which a karmic effect can come to proper or full fruition, it is often not until the next lifetime or even several lifetimes in the future that a soul encounters and experiences the force of those particular karmic results. This is one of the main reasons why reincarnation occurs. Karma and reincarnation are inextricably linked. The soul must receive its just deserts, whether bad, good, or a mixture of both. This is the way, the means, and the method whereby the universe maintains its harmony, balance, and equilibrium. It is because of this knowledge that law rules and reigns throughout all of nature that the great masters and the teachers of theosophy declare that contrary to all appearances, there is never actually any injustice anywhere. In the voice of the silence, we are advised to quote, "Chafe not at karma. Rigid justice rules the world," end quote. In the past, we created our present, and in the present, we are creating our future. Theosophy teaches the vital importance of altruism, unselfishness, compassion, and living to help and serve others. It maintains that universal brotherhood is not merely a noble and lofty ideal, but is eternally a fact in nature. All is one because the one is all. Therefore, it is selfish if we live unto ourselves alone. We are all part of the whole, and there is no separation in the universe. Personal desire, ambition, greed, and lust are all misguided forms of selfishness. And it is selfishness which is the great curse of humanity and the cause of human suffering. There is one esoteric teaching, a universal philosophy, a secret doctrine, which underlies all the world's religions. It actually predates and transcends all religions. It is the truth itself. All religions contain some portion of the truth, some to a greater degree than others. The motto of theosophy is, there is no religion higher than truth. The purpose of the United Lodge of Theosophists is to teach truth as it is, free from all limitations and restrictions of religious dogma, creed, and theology. The many writings and teachings of H.P. Blavatsky present, demonstrate, and prove this teaching to the full extent that was permitted by those masters who were her teachers and instructors. The truth just mentioned has sometimes been called the ancient wisdom, the ageless wisdom, and the divine wisdom. Ancient, ageless, and divine wisdom, the writings of H.P. Blavatsky and others like William Q. Judge and Robert Crosby is so overwhelming. How do I start? We can only do things one step at a time. Begin with trying to gain some mastery over your thoughts, words, and deeds, and live to be of help and service to others. But don't let your underlying motive for this be one of selfishness. That is to say, for the sake of creating good karma for yourself. but rather live the life of love and compassion simply because it is the right thing to do. Love goodness and virtue for its own sake. Realize that selfishness is the great curse of humanity, and live merely to be an impersonal, beneficent force for good in this world. When we take that first step toward our neighbor, we take a global step with dignity toward universal brotherhood. Always remember that human dignity is being able to look anyone directly in the eye and recognize the divine in them that you see reflected back to you. Namaste.
Thank you. This was a very deep and well thought of talk, and it sort of humbles one after hearing it and looking, how do I fit into that? What degree do I understand? So it's very interesting. So you might have comments or questions.
So what I gather from this is that really we shouldn't be concerned about karma per se. We should be concerned about living life now and embrace our oneness and everything that we have that is similar, that we should be, striving for those ideas and not concerned, well, yeah, karma is working, we just heard how it works, and that are really, it seems that our attitude and our motives are really the things that create the world in which we're living.
Two key points. Attitude is the one and follows up. But it is true. What our attitude is about life in general could maybe make us question more how we interact with each other. That symbol of we're all one is such a vast universal statement. We're all one. We're all the same in that essence of the one. And we look around us, and for us, we see dissension. We see differences of opinion. We see all the negative rather than the positive. And the positive of feeling that we're all one should make us think maybe twice when we have to be in action with others.
But it's really what we're seeing is a selfishness.
True.
That's all it is. It's just selfishness and the heresy of being separate. And it's very chilling as a human being to see what's going on, and knowing it's like they're just doing it to themselves. They just can't control their passions.
That is very true, and yet there are some who look around the world and the way the situation is and look at themselves, and they don't really connect with the selfishness of the self. They don't see it that way. They still have a feeling that as I get pain, others get pain too. As I feel pain, others feel pain. So that is more of an undefined feeling to have, that this selfishness is not really necessary and needed. And a lot of that leads back to this system of it's one life, get out there and live it and get the most you can. if you have that sort of attitude, there's a lot that's going to pile up on our shoulders. But if you look at the idea that we're all one, and that we all have the same types of feelings, fears, hopes, it maybe gives one a different attitude about life in general. We're all here for a reason. Where there's a cause, there will be an effect. We know that. Yes, way in the back.
As far as all the materialism which the world is mired in today, and there needs to come a turning point. I can't go on forever, obviously. We think about the souls that are being born now, how strong they must be for what is in store, what is coming. But we see a lot of hope, too. And we think that, these are the souls that will be around when the next great impulse comes in 2075. The souls that are being born now and have been born recently that will be able to take advantage of that impulse, that great uplift, that impulse. But it's up to us to hold on during this period, this difficult period, which is, in a sense, a decline before the next wave. It's really... it's up to us to keep this message alive and pure and available to the best of our abilities, even though we don't see vast numbers of people being attracted to it. We don't really know what's going on. It's like in the wintertime, we don't know the seeds that are germinating underground. We can't see how they thrill, but they are. So we should really always be hopeful and not take a negative attitude, because it's not strictly numbers that matter. It's just keeping the message alive.
And for some of us that are older, our youth was, we didn't question much. We did what we were told. We never even thought to question. I mean, you see stories about little children, why this, why that, why this? There's so much in it. And yet, if you look at even the youth today that are questioning it and coming out and wanting to be noticed as, I too have feelings, I too have an opinion, that for some of us, we were not brought up with that around you. So this idea of, we see a lot of this freedom in our youth and our young people today. This is a good, it's a good working to question. And for those that have been brought up with not to question and find stuff like these teachings, it was like, my goodness, it was going back to school again. It was like opening a whole new world that we didn't even know exists. So we will see much change, but we have to understand causes have been set up. We will reap the effects, and our attitude of how we look at stuff, not through this narrow way, but at least a broader way so we can understand each other, is going to make the difference. Now, you had a point?
Well, it's said that the masters can't do too much. They can't push too hard, because there's an opposite and equal reaction that will take place on the moral plane. So if we're looking at the world now, how sad it is, how much suffering there is, and it seems hopeless for many. There has to be that opposite and equal reaction on the other side,
right?
Which we don't see. But we're all hopeful, and it's hope. It's like
it, it is.
You know.
You know that old saying, and this too will pass? We have to understand that's karma. And this too, this situation, this time will pass. It will continue to move onward. But for each one, if we take a broader attitude, as you're saying, we can be a help to great masters, really, by learning to stand up for ourselves and yet not interfere with others. That other old adage is, mind your own business. That's what we were told as young kids when we asked too many. Just mind your own business. There's a lot in that statement, people. Really a lot in that statement. Yes.
Well, we've heard the law, action and reaction. The first thing we should do is look for examples of that we never looked at before. So while this is going on, I thought of the old parable, the rubber band and the paddle,
yes,
and how we used to. Uh-huh. Years ago, you were a champion paddleball. It depended upon the sharpness of your eye, repeated practice, so much so that you were skilled in the right performance of action. If you missed, that shows that you lose a point. So these are examples in our everyday life that we can use. As you sow, you reap.
So
action, reaction. And now when we apply it to our moral and ethical nature, we see the difficulty involved.
That's very true. There's so many old statements, sayings that have been handed down and they're still around today. There must be a reason for it. Like we think of the idea of treat others as you would like others to treat you. Do we really delve into that and think about it? Treat others as you would like others to treat you. There is a balance and a harmony here somewhere. We've got to find it. If we want to continue on our path that we want to do, yes.
One of the greatest challenges, it would seem, in today's world is to grant dignity to those who are hate-mongering, to those who are working in a causeless hate scenario against any group on the face of the globe. Granting them the dignity of soul and soul in process of becoming, boy, that's tough.
Sure.
Not to be reactionary or judgmental, whatever word you want to use.
And that might be that we're too involved and too close to the situation. If we could learn to stand back and broaden our scope, like I forgot what they're called, the things that are on horses.
Blinders.
The blinders, yes. For most of us, we do have blinders of our own making. If we could move those away and try to look deeper in and not be so judgmental about others. If you're going to be judgmental, look in the mirror. Let's just look in the mirror and then make some judgments. We might be shocked at the amount of judgments we'd have to take. There are a lot of times that we have to understand when we get into the whole idea later on in the ocean of the different ages. Yes, we are in the Kali Yuga, the quote, dark age. But that doesn't mean that we can't make progress because of all the ages, the golden, the silver, the bronze, the iron which we're in. It might be the darkest of ages, but it's also the shortest and quickest moving. So in this age, and this time, great fast period of evolution, we could make good progress if we would just set back and let all the stuff that we see around us that, quote, irritates us, and just leave it as it is. If we can do something to help another or to help a situation, do it. If you really feel like you want to do it, just do it. If you flub it, if you goof it up, the fact that you did put the effort forth. And for some of us, we just hold our effort in the back. It's very picky about what I'm going to go out and do and not do. Rather than use it as a universal scope, we would find a lot of stuff that's going on in the world today doesn't eat at us, but yet it says, observe, learn from it. Life is a learning. Learn from it. There might be times that we just can't do anything about it. We tried to look up as many of the sayings that we could come up with from this that have been around, and we compiled some, just thinking, speaking. The idea that the real root of human dignity is karma, is that cause and effect. We're the ones that set up the causes. Do we realize what we're asking? Do we know what the effect's going to be? Not necessarily. But within each one of us is a divine potential. They keep, all the ancient teachings have said this. And it said, broadly speaking, may be said to be the convenience of the nature of the act, and each act consists within itself the past and the future. We've done it before, you're going to do it again. If you want to work on something that's within you that you don't feel is helpful to yourself or anyone around you, we're the ones that have to do it. We can't expect it to be somebody else's problem. Karma is a fascinating, interesting thing. And it says, leave the results to the law of karma. Once you put something into action, it will have its results. And the folly of worrying over the results or the regrets or the fears or the hopes in regards to them is beyond our reach, really. What'll be'll be. There's so many hints out there to tell us, you know, and that good old adage, do unto others as you would like others to do unto you. That has a lot of depth to it. For most of it, we just flip it off our tongue. So who knows? And it says, one's natural duty. What is our natural duty? Is a result of our karma. Our causes we have set up to get the results. We can't put it on anybody else's. So it just says it's a natural duty. It's a natural duty that affects us all individually and as a whole. Yes, way in the back.
Excuse me. We think that the intellectual comprehension of karma, and as far as the law goes, it seems all very right and fair and just, but we still have the personality to deal with that feels like, and on a personal level, we still feel often that, why is this happening to me, poor me, one can get depressed. And sometimes it's hard to, it's just, you know, it's the intellectual is the easy part, we think, for most people. But as far as the person, when the personality gets involved, rising above that and subduing the personality, that's the real challenge. Any suggestions on this?
Yeah, it is a battle. This personality, folks, hey, I created this. Now, if I got a lot of stuff in here I just don't want to see anymore, I have to be the one that's going to change it and learn. We might have many mistakes. We might slip and slide. We might constantly be bumping. But if the fact is, if we're willing to keep trying to learn what it means to walk that middle path, that there are those who are like that, who can walk that middle path, who can look up, who can look down, who can look left, who can look right, but continue on that middle path, depending what we make of that middle path. Yes?
We were wondering if there's a theosophical equivalent. As a child, we were told to offer your sufferings up for the souls in purgatory. Could that be like to just maybe offer up the sufferings to those that you have harmed in the past?
But I was looking first briefly and I'm thinking, why would you want to do that? But that could be a very important point. Yes.
We think the Gita speaks to that. We think the Gita speaks to that, whatever the challenges that we're going through or the joys that we're going through, to, you know, experience them in the highest light. You know, the words it uses, you know, sacrifice it to your higher self, sacrifice it to Krishna. So there's something about the mindset that we have while we're experiencing what we're experiencing that perhaps, you know, maybe it has some kind of a transmutative effect if we have a constructive, loving, open attitude and willing to do what we're doing for the right reasons, as opposed to living a life in a begrudging way. Does that?
Yeah.
I don't know if we're getting it across, but
It's interesting.
He said, sacrifice your actions to Krishna. So it's hard to verbalize exactly what that means, but have the right frame of mind, I think.
Well, yeah, the right frame of mind, and what is that statement that Michelle Obama made? Oh, when they go low, we go high. Maybe that's a good point, because when you're high, everything is not as bad as when you go low, when you dig deep. So that's an attitude that we should have about ourselves. Because if we do honestly feel that we have been here many times before, many situations, many lifetimes before, we have, I'm sure, a bank load of stuff to go through yet, and we haven't even touched on it. But the fact that there is a possibility that each one can finally get to the point where they are balanced, where they are in harmony with everyone and everything, it's sometimes hard to believe you could be such a lifetime. But yet we see historically there have been those periods of peace and prosperity to each and all, depending what your each and all are looking for. Yes.
The Gita puts it that
it'll come.
It was there the whole time until I, you know, that karma yoga is what we should be doing right now, yeah. Right here, and not and it's very simple. None of this matters. What matters is, are you trying to be equal-minded? Are you not looking for the results of your work? And who are you sacrificing to? You're sacrificing yourself to everything. And so you're, the universe is intelligent. Well, work with the universe then, rather than trying to fight it.
And for some of us, it might be very difficult to even start the approach to do this. But you know that old saying, if you just keep doing it and keep doing it and keep doing it, guess what? It becomes a habit. And how many of us say, oh, if I could just get this habit off my back. We created it, but it could be, you know, it's all, habits are not all negative. There are positive habits to have too. And the broader speaking and the broader scope of the idea of reincarnation and karma, it sometimes makes you feel very, very tiny in this whole vast picture of evolution. Very, very tiny. We need to feel that more often. Too much we start sort of strut around like a chicken, you know? And it's, we don't really think that's the way to live.
Well, yeah. Well, that's the personality. The personality is living. Now,
and who created that personality?
Well, that's it.
We did.
That's it. And but we've created personalities and we let them go and take control because we've trained them what's fun and what's not fun. What do we want to avoid and what, you know,
right.
What do we want to engage in? And like we've already planned our course and now we find ourselves, well, maybe perhaps we should question more. And so you begin questioning more.
It's, you know, you sometimes you read, especially when you're reading the Gita, and you think, what a wise, wise man Krishna is, and how fortunate for Arjuna to have him around. And yet it took Arjuna 18 chapters to keep asking, could you tell me again how I'm supposed to do this or do that? It's like we need a constant reminder on how to be kind or how to be nice. Come on, folks. We all have those periods of times where we are kind and nice. And it's an inner feeling, not that you have to express to anyone. It's just something that seems to pull at your heart, shall we say. And you don't need anybody to tell you it was good or bad. You just have that feeling from it. We just don't do it often enough. We've dressed this personality life after life. Certain situations are easy to get around. Others, we keep hitting the wall all the time. And it's like, when are we gonna wake up?
Well, it's karma.
True.
Whatever we have coming to us is what we've made ourselves. We have no one to blame. We just have to accept what it is and then make a decision with this new understanding that we have. How do we not create more karma? How do we get out of this vicious cycle that we are in?
And look how many lifetimes it must have taken for any personality in one lifetime to come to bloom. And then you have to ask, well, then who is this that's asking? What's going on here? Why is all this happening? We wonder, it is a lot of questioning, but it's also a lot of thinking before we act. For so many, we act, and if you're lucky, you might think about it later, but the fact is, we just jump into things, boom, 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 boom. So it might be helpful if we could slow our pace in our actions, in our situations. Yes.
Well, that's what we were thinking of, what was brought up, the karma yoga, when we were saying, you know, sacrifice your actions and what you're doing to Krishna. That's what karma yoga, yoga is union. Karma yoga is making your actions united with the higher. So that's what we're looking for. And when it comes to, you know, karma and dignity, isn't it interesting that whether the conditions a person lives in are squalid or whether the conditions are such that the individual has complete command over nature's forces, like a Mahatma, a person who lives in dignity, regardless of the conditions, is a person who is humble. So the person who's living in squalor, if they are humble, then it seems they're probably operating from that place in their heart where they are accepting, I did create this, and doing what's necessary to make the best out of whatever. If they weren't humble, they'd be blaming somebody else for it. I couldn't possibly have done this. And so they're probably in their heart in the right place. So humility and dignity in that sense go together. Mm-hmm. And then the opposite of that is not a materially wealthy person. The opposite of that is the Mahatma, who has control over all the forces of nature, so to speak, and still is so humble that he would not even pretend to have control over another person and make another person think the way he wants him to think, because he understands it just doesn't happen that way. So humility goes hand in hand with dignity in that sense, it seems.
Yes, and in a way, when you say dignity and humility to some people, there is a feeling of, the only expression we can think of is walking tall. One who can see it all and know how to work within it, that's one who has dignity. And for most of us, in some situations, we might hit upon it every so often in a certain situation that we just do it because we know what to do. Most of the time we just do stuff because it's routine. We never questioned. Maybe a lot of this would help if we'd start questioning more about ourselves rather than the outside situations around us. Maybe start questioning about maybe make up a list of the pros and the cons. And we might find out that the cons go on page after page and the pros are a little short. Maybe that might be something that we could work on to learn where we have to improve. Yes.
What theosophy gives us, for which we should be eternally grateful and very humble, is to familiarize ourselves with that single concept. There is something or some idea that is above all karma, or the term karma-less. And the problem is our ignorance.
Is our what?
Ignorance.
Ignorance.
Of the fact in all of nature. Then we begin to learn that we have the responsibility to keep harmony, and our aim and purpose is to help and teach others. That immortality within us, the true self, we were always ignorant of that fact. Until in these rooms, we gained that confidence and that immovable trust. So much so, it's on the mark, in God we trust. Therefore, rise above yourself, and the aim and the purpose becomes clear to help nature in her sacred task. True unselfishness. The cause of our pain and suffering is our selfishness.
And again, that's something that we've had to build on more than this one lifetime, folks. Any one lifetime, we should be able to try to stretch out how this all came about. For some of us, it's easier. For others, it's not. For those who like Patanjali's, we like his statement about the environment is this body. Mine, the plastic nature, is the emotions and the desires. So as a thinker, we have to have those sort of balance the underside of it. And this whole idea of reincarnation is the doctrine of hope. Well, the doctrine of responsibility is the law of karma. And the responsibility has to fall back on us, nothing else. We're probably what we could say learners on probation, you know. We could try to do the best we can, and we found some other states too. The state of humankind in this world is probationary. A lot of people don't even think about that. But humankind in this world is probationary. We can move in any time and any lifetime. And it tells us virtue brings its own rewards, and vice and sin bring their own punishment. So there is a balancing that goes on. And if we don't realize where we stand and how we know this, it's not going to help anyone at all, including ourselves. And it says, virtue brings its own rewards, and I like that, and vice and sin bring their own punishment. So the situations that we're attached to, that cling to us like a magnet, that irritate us, maybe those are the ones we have to start to work on first. We get all these great ideas from ancient sages that have been passed down through the ages. The information is out there. We just have to look for it. And it says, everything that exists from natural causes. So it would seem any lifetime there is a time period when the individual can overcome the personality and be more in control, where for most of us it's the personality that's controlling the individuality. It's sad way to think about it, but that's what it is. So we never know.
Are you speaking of us now?
Yes.
That our personality is in control of us?
Yes.
And that we have no control?
We do, but we have to wake up. We're a little lazy in that area. We do have a way of controlling the personality.
Wake up to what?
Wake up to what we really are. For most, it's everything that we can physically touch and hear and see. But there's something much higher, they tell us, to look for. That light within, that knowledge, that everything that we've gone through, if we wanted to and could learn how to adapt to it, we could go from that waking state, sleeping state, deep sleep, bring back anything from that level, can come back and bring it through concrete. For most of us, any of our true nature that is lives on a higher plane, by coming back through the dreaming state, through the sleeping state, to the waking state, it gets all fiddled away. Have some of you ever had a dream that you woke up and you couldn't really pull it all together, but there was a physical feeling within you? They say that feeling, and it sort of dies out as we start to wake up, and what am I going to wear today for that meeting, and blah, 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 and how am I going to do this and that? And we get so busy chattering that we lose that feeling.
Well, they say that, they use the analogy like we are a drop in that great ocean, we are a ray of that great sun. So they're telling us that there's something in us that is unchanging, eternal, boundless, and immutable. Can we know that? Is that what our mission is, to find our true nature?
Well, it would seem that would be the balance and the harmony that we can see within the universe. Otherwise, wouldn't you see a lot of chaos going on? Planets going into planets, comets going into comets. There would be so much confusion. And yet, if you start to study any information that has to do with learning about this universe and the making of it, and this whole idea of what's out there in space, it just seems there's more systematic going on there than there is in our human situation. There are those, as was stated, the great masters, the great sages down through the ages, who have been through all this and have learned how to take control. For most of us, we maybe get it in spurts, but we haven't just, you know, it's those mental deposits that we have to work on, or that we'll always have this unexhaustible karma to work on.
So this taking control, then, we assume that is our lower nature that we have to take control of.
Right. It's
there's
like
nothing else that we have to really be concerned about. It's just this lower nature that is controlling us.
And we have let it, not just this lifetime. It has such a strength that we're just not aware of it. So for an idea for closing, we wanted to just come up with this one thing we found we thought would be helpful to us. What is the higher ideal to carry? To thus prepare to renounce the final rewards in order that one may remain with humanity, making no new karma themselves, and helping others along the steep road to perfection. That's our signs of these great masters and adepts. That's what they've done. And they're telling us that we too can take control of our life. So we hope this subject of karma, the root of human dignity, maybe will make us want to question more about who and what we really are. And class is finished.